you for coming to my website, African American Apologetics. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account of the hope that is in you with gentleness and with reverence." Thanks for coming by the Lucy Coleman Studio, and Lucy in Los Angeles, California. And as I get closer and closer to the Christmas holidays, the more I miss my dear Filipino wife, because this house would be smelling like, oh, Filipino food. It would have been decorated by now. The tree would have been decked, and my girls would have been leaving every weekend with their mother, going shopping and all that. I miss those days. They were great days. I haven't had days like that in so, so long. Thank you for joining me. I just thought that I'd do this Wednesday webcast here on the 7th of December, 2011, simply because I haven't done enough webcasts for you, and I want to inform you as to what's going on. And there's an awful lot of things going on in my life these days. I'm glad that you have found favor in coming to the website, listening to some of the web clips and things like that. Some of you already know that I'm going in for a medical procedure on tomorrow morning. I have to be at the hospital around 6 o'clock. And for the first time, I guess they're going to do some cutting inside of my body somewhere. And it's kind of an exciting time. I'm looking forward to it, and so that we can see what's happening to my body function. Some of my body functions are kind of like placed on hold, but when you get to be this age, that happens. I have the deepest sympathy going out to a good friend of mine that I learned a couple of days ago that passed away. He was 70 years old, and I want to send out my prayers to his family and to his friends. We will indeed miss that brother. He would come and visit my Bible study in my home with the other study people in the group, and he always had something very provocative and exciting to share, and I'm going to miss him. A very good contemporary friend of mine, an adult that understood the times that he lives. We often had an opportunity to discuss this young generation and the culture of this generation and what they are confronted with. And it was just simply always a joy to have my friend around me. I'm going to miss him. And isn't that the way it is when you really find a good Christian friend? This brother taught Bible study at his own church, and I was taking care of some business, and when he heard that I had a Bible study out of my home here, he came by and for a few good times, and really appreciated that. And I like the way he ended his life. Though he was sick, you would never know it. He kind of like, as a man, kept that all on the inside. He didn't carry his sickness on his shoulder like that. And he was a most, I guess you can say, a most appreciative guy to be around. His last name is Bailey, and that's all I'm going to share with you, the listening audience, because you didn't know him, but he was a champion in my book, and I'm going to miss Bailey. And I'm just so happy that this semester is coming to an end. I had to do a little rush job, I think, maybe a period or so ahead before the class ended to finish up the finals. And I think that I've done that in those three classes because I just think that it's good business if you're going to go in and put yourself under the blade and they're going to have to put you to sleep. It's best to clear up some things. And so I did that today. I have just a few more papers to grade tonight after my own Bible study here in my own home. Wrap things up, put it on a pick drive in case something goes drastically wrong so that the students can finish up their semester fine. Would like to thank some of the students for the kind words that they told me that they had, especially in my philosophy of religion class. Now, this class was ending up today, and I'm telling you, just a wonderful time. I took Mario down to the classroom with me because I wanted him to be a part of this closing semester to see. And, you know, Mario told me, he says, John, you should really feel bad. A lot of people really care for you and like for you and, you know, like you a lot. And I guess because I have this, I don't have any self-esteem about me. I think that what I do what I do because I do it the best. I think I'm a pretty good teacher. I try to at least think that I am. And then I try to be fair with the students that I teach, giving them an opportunity to make that grade. And, you know, a lot of profs don't do that. They have it one way, and if the student doesn't get it that way, well, then, you know, they're going to, it's just going to be bad news. I try to give all my students an opportunity to pass with dignity, and I kind of like that. I've always been that way, but it's been a great, great semester, and I want to give a heads up to all students in all three classes, Ethics, Philosophy 1, and Philosophy of Religion. It has been a marvelous semester, a very quick semester, a very busy semester. And I'm looking forward to next semester. Only have one class on the docket, Intro to Philosophy. But that's okay because it's going to afford me the opportunity to, and Mario greatly encouraged me, believe it or not, gives me a great opportunity to write my book or to at least get into writing it and finishing that. And I want to do that. I think that's very important to do. As you can see, people have been writing letters to me, some of the students from the classroom that I'm grateful to hear. I'm glad that I don't get too much feedback from the apologetics part of this ministry because we know what's happened there. You know, when you sow to the wind, you're going to reap the whirlwind. So it's kind of like a situation where you're just waiting to hear something else tragic going on in the church. It's sad to say, but that's the kind of a world that we live in. I also like to share with you something very important. At the end of the semester, within a few days, I'll be starting another study group class, hopefully in my classroom, and putting forth much more time in presenting legitimate webcasts to you people, and so that I can keep you abreast with what is going on. I'd like to share something with you now, maybe to give you pause. It's a little bit about what I'm going to talk about today on the webcast, and I'm going to try to raise this issue on my other thing here, my other computer, because I said, oh my goodness, this is such a great subject matter. I do not want to lose this, but I do want to share with you guys some of the things that I'm going to be talking about in my Bible study class tonight. And I think that it's going to be a pretty good question to ask. And the reason that I said that is because I raised the question that I'm going to ask you about tonight to my philosophy students. Let's see if I can find it. Let's see. You know, I can't find it now, and I wonder what I called it. It's amazing that that happened. Let me try to find the copy in my notebook. this is exactly the kind of thing that excites me, because, you know, the kind of apologetics that I do is not going to be the kind of apologetics that makes you feel comfortable about things, but the kind of apologetic that makes you think through it. And I presented it to my ethics class last night, and I'd like to present it to you now. And I plan to present it to my Bible study group tonight to see how they handle it. I'll make copies for them all. They'll have the copies. This professor of philosophy in Southern Seminary ends, he says, every year my Christian ethics class at Southern Seminary ends with a final examination that amounts to answering a hypothetical question. The point, this professor says, is not to get any particular answer, but to see how they get to where they get. And do they have the tools to think through ethical decisions with wisdom and discernment? Well, I used this in my ethics class last night, and they had to break up in groups as I presented the grades to each student. And as they broke up into groups, I had them answering the question here. And, of course, the professor asked, how would you answer it? Then he says, you find yourself far away from this ethics class, 20 years, as a matter of fact, away from it. You're now in ministry, doing Christian ministry, serving a church in, let's say, South Florida. Pablo is a man that you met, and his wife Hannah, after they attended a small group Bible study in your home, of a family in your church. Both of them, after hearing you explain the gospel, were convicted of sin, and after several weeks of conversation, both announced that they were ready to confess Jesus as Lord and to follow him in baptism. Before the baptism, though, Pablo approaches you to say that he is not sure that he meets the requirements of Christian baptism. He's not sure that he's a repentant sinner. He sees himself as guilty. He is sorry for his sins against God and the others, and he wants the forgiveness that comes through Jesus' bloody cross, the new life that comes from Jesus' empty tomb. So Pablo has heard you preach. But there is something that kindles fear in Pablo. Pablo tells you that he's an undocumented worker, what some would call an illegal immigrant. Years ago, he left conditions in El Salvador, and due to the famine there, it led him to near starvation. Moreover, he worked like others in his village for a multinational plantation where he was physically beaten and sexually abused. There were no other options for him, as the only employees in the country were made up similarly of exploitive companies. He slipped into this country, the United States of America, undetected, and has since lived with an artificial Social Security number that he purchased on the black market, enabling him to work in this country. So thus far, you're feeling me, right? Good, good. You're feeling me. Pablo's employer knows his immigration status. In other words, if he works for the gringo knows that he's illegal. But he operates with the don't ask, don't tell mentality or policy. When it comes to such questions about his workers, this employer, indeed several outside financial consultants, say that whether such labor is employer's business would be financially unfeasible and would have to close, since there's not sufficient employee base amongst the native-born Americans willing to work in at such a job. Now, that was problematic to me. When Americans need jobs, but they won't work and do the jobs that an undocumented worker would do. The United States immigration policy is anything in that is anything more restrictive than its use when you in this ethics class in Southern Seminary no longer can a green card be obtained by marrying a U.S. citizen. This is in this time coming in the future. So Pablo's marriage to Anna is irrelevant to his immigration status. So I think you get the drill. Pablo and his wife Hannah are illegal aliens. You got a ministry. You're a pastor or you're a Bible teacher. Do you turn them into immigration? Now, Pablo has been here for a number of years. He has a job. He's sending money back home to take care of his grandmother. And the grandmother's taking care of the children of Pablo's brother who was killed there in that foreign country. So the money that he's making, he's sending some back home. He's a good citizen. Never been in trouble with the law, but he's not a citizen. He has an illegal green card. You find out as a pastor of a church, what are you going to do? Are you going to obey the law and turn Pablo and Hannah in and have them deported back to El Salvador or wherever they're from? Or are you going to know that he has an illegal Social Security card number and that he is illegal as a day is long? Are you going to justify him staying in this country? Are you going to baptize him? Are you going to make him a part of your Bible study group? Are you going to let him become a member of your church? He's an illegal, undocumented worker. That is illegal. What are you going to do? I think that is an ethical question. How do we answer that question? I mean, they're illegal. Do we go by Romans 13 and obey the laws of the land, the government of the land? Or do we forego obeying the laws of the land and such and, you know, join in this scenario with Pablo and Hannah to get them to stay here? Let's see if Christianity works. You know what I'd like? I'd like to hear from some of you out there because I'm going to present this idea or this scenario to my Bible study group, and I presented it to some of my ethics students. Let me read, because they broke off in groups while I was reviewing their grades, and let me get that and kind of share that with you. I'm kind of leaning back from the microphone right now as I pick up the notebook here because I want to share some of their answers. About five or six of them in a group as I was sharing the grades. And I haven't read some of the response, and I asked the youngsters to write down their response. Now, obviously, some of these people are Christians, and I asked for a general overall deal, you know, what would you do? And everybody was saying, no, I'm not sending him back. He can stay. And this is all against the biblical principle that these people are trying to claim without thinking about any particular consequence about that. And I just have a little difficulty with it. But let's read and see what some of the students say. I think that's a fair thing to do. And I'm just going to try to get a little light over here in the studio and so that I can read this thing and give it to you. It says, I as a minister, we will not send Pablo Escobar back to his home country, El Salvador. As long as we are under the divine command theory, everything else is irrelevant. So this student takes the divine command theory in the philosophy ethics class to do the right thing. That is, well, let me see the way they wrote it. The divine command theory states that being morally right is a matter of being commanded by God, and being morally wrong is a matter of being forbidden by God. So now these secular students are paying attention to my lectures. And then he says that I would not send him back to El Salvador because it would destroy their family, and that would be immoral for me. I would also be destroying their marriage and their kids. And I am aware that I would be going against the government, but I am not following the natural law command by the government. Now, that's one group. That was Johnny, Napoleon, and Ricky. That's what they came up with. It's very interesting. And I find that these secular students, in some cases, are far smarter than Christians. Now, here's Aaliyah, Marion, Jason, and Shantoya's answer. In the religious perspective, Pablo does not live in sin if he remains in this country illegally. And he says, obviously, Pablo feels guilty because of his status as an illegal immigrant, but because he's repented of his sin before the allowance of his baptismal, it shows his obedience before God. Also, the student writes and says that we reasoned that the morally right thing to do in any circumstance is whether there is the best reasons for doing it. We say this in behalf of his family being presently with him here instead of being in El Salvador. Then their statement goes on and says, we are inconclusive, but however, it benefits the employer and his family, which is a greater good. So they're saying, forget the laws of the land, that the employer and what he's doing is all amounting to a greater good. Morally speaking, says that the employer is right for not turning in Pablo because he knows Pablo's condition in El Salvador and if he is deported. So those conditions will lead to his family starving to death and to him dying in his job. As a congregation, this person writes and says that we agree to pray over Pablo and his family. As a congregation, they said that we cannot judge him. Only God can judge him. We can't do anything but pray and let him do his thing and let God take over and hope for the best. Well, that's kind of like a hands-off situation there. It's kind of, I wasn't expecting that, that's for sure. Let me grab another one. Yeah, let me grab another one and see what another group says. It's very interesting. And keep this in mind, I'm going to present this to my Bible study group tonight. Here's an answer. Pablo, although it breaks U.S. law, should just keep doing what he is doing. The question is through the eyes of religion and not through a society. So, therefore, as long as he is honest with himself and God, he is all right and should get baptized. As far as the employer goes, there are two arguments. The first is to support him because he is giving Pablo the opportunity for a better life. And the second reason is to explain to him that by hiring illegal immigrants, he is increasing his own profits, but depriving the community of those jobs and the taxes generated by them. So here's a group saying, you know, the employer has to take some culpability in this also, because he's acting like there ain't nothing wrong. And sure enough, there's an awful lot wrong. I'm wondering what you're thinking as you listen to these answers. Oh, and the students that wrote that, and I have to give extra credit if they need it towards the end of this semester, of course. That was Matt, Christina, Relena, Valerie, Darrell, and Morgan. They wrote that. Now I'm going to read the paragraph from Diana, Jacqueline, Nathaniel, and Herillo. Herillo is a nice young man. He has an alphabet last name. I won't even try to mention that. It says, Pablo should stay here with his family, because other lives depend upon him. He has good intentions, helping out his family. In order for him to save his family, he has to break the law. Just like the Nazis murdered the Jewish people, some German people helped out the Jews, knowing that they would get in trouble. They morally felt obligated to help them because they knew that it was wrong. Mother Teresa was very religious, and she knew that she had to help the less fortunate because that is what God would want. She knew she would be rewarded by God. Now, this is, you know, thank you, group. That really encourages me. And I'm telling you, that's why I teach secular philosophy in a secular school instead of a Christian school, because in a Christian school, I can only imagine. And then, of course, in this little outline here, the professor asked the Christians to use scriptures to back up their answer. Now, thus far, logically, in this class of ethics, in my ethics class, ain't nobody using no scripture. They're just using the argument of natural law against the divine command theory, which a student should do. And a lot of these students, when they took philosophy with me, had never heard whether there be a divine command theory, whether one is commanded by God or not commanded by God to do something. Now, Clinton, Anthony, Martinez, and Shea answers and says, Pablo should stay with his family because immigration laws are man-made and not God-made. Isn't this something? Isn't this something? But wait a minute. Well, I guess that they're just disregarding. All right. Then he says, ethically speaking, we as priests in the congregation of men and etc. would not be breaking any religious rules. But Pablo does have a moral contract when he married his wife and decided to have those three children and therefore take this responsibility. This responsibility supersedes man-made law or any religious principle that may interfere with this. Furthermore, if put in this situation, if any of us would risk the legal consequences in order to believe what is morally correct, because the morally right thing to do in any circumstance is whether there are the best reasons for doing it. I'm telling you, these students really learned something in my ethics class this semester. That's why it's going to be a lot of fun in the Bible study group to present this to a group of Christians and see how they answer it. Now we got Escobar, Cano, Rabit, Gonzalez, Lydia, Bilala, and Trujillo to answer the question. And this is what they say. They said there are two ways in which we discuss the question about Pablo and Hannah. The two things are in a governmental point of view versus the divine point of view. We as a group feel that Pablo should not turn himself in. We feel that even though he is considered a criminal by law, he is doing the right thing by working and providing for himself, his wife, his family, his elderly mother, his nieces and nephews. If we were to weigh things out, then we should look at the pros and cons. Pablo is saving his family and keeping them from starving, while other illegal immigrants are breaking the law by doing crimes such as murdering, robbing, raping, or drug dealing. So, this section of the class knows that there are scandalous people out there working this way. Then he says, according to our group, Pablo is doing the morally right thing. We feel that Pablo is an example of how people ought to be. Pablo lives a really God life, a good life, yet he doesn't let that stop him. All right? He tries hard to keep his family from starving, even if it means breaking man-made laws and suffering while trying to make it. Now, you know what? I want to tell you. From reading all those students brainstorming, and this comes at the end of the ethics semester. At the end of the ethics semester. All of these students will get the extra credit for doing this assignment. And I must add, while this was going on, I had another group of students lined up at my desk to see their grades. They would line up, get their grades, and then they go back to their group. Now, here it is the end of the semester where classrooms are usually one-third full and two-thirds empty. They're quiet. This was a 7 to 10 o'clock class that I teach on Tuesday nights. The classroom was packed because in this classroom, I think I have 41 students, and they're all there. Basically, they meet one more time with me, and that's next Tuesday. And I haven't lost any, and they're working out these ethical questions in a very decent way. Now, I'm putting this up on my Christian website, and I would love. Now, you know why I go thumbs down on evangelicals. Because evangelicals don't want to answer the question. Evangelicals don't want to play ball with me. The evangelical would start quoting script. I want to see how the Christian is going to do this. And of course, if you never thought about it ethically, I don't expect them to. What I'm going to do is have on my little board up there. Let's see, it's a little after 6 o'clock. My Bible study starts at 7 o'clock. And I just want to see how they would handle this situation. Want to know how you would handle it also. Would you turn Pablo and Hannah in? All right, let's say that you are a Southern Christian from the Bible Belt. You're from the state of Alabama, Mississippi. All right, Texas. Well, I can't say Texas because Texas second cousins are Hispanic people. You know, Texans have always gotten along with the Mexican nation so close to the border. I'm talking about Arkansas. Talking about those deep southern Bible Belt states. I wonder what they would say. Would they hold to man's law, the Constitution of the United States of America? Is the Constitution, listen to the question, and I'm not proposing that you overrun our borders and let everybody in this country to do that, because you know what's happened. A lot of the Hispanic people are in this country now, and what this professor in Southern Seminary says is that the Hispanics are doing the works that the indigenous citizens of the country won't do. I told my students in class, if I needed a job and I needed to make some money to put some food on the table, I would go into McDonald's and clean toilets. That would be my job. I would clean some toilets. I would do the work. I would do the math, and I would feed my family. I don't think that you have to hire illegals with illegal Social Security cards and illegal living status to do a job that we Americans wouldn't do. I disagree with that, but though I do realize that many American citizens are happy with the situation the way it is. Now, of course, my classroom is full of Hispanic children, and so I know that there is a racial tie that holds them into these answers. You heard some of their first names that I'm giving, Martinez, Jose, Escobar, and all this. And so these are people with Spanish surnames. I understand that. But in that group were whites and blacks. And all of them agreed in total unison that they would not send these people, Pablo and Hannah, back to their birth country. They know that they're breaking the law. They justify the employers that hire them in order to break the law. So the inevitable question is, what about the Constitution of the United States? Since the Constitution of the United States was a man-made document, then Barack Obama does not have to be a citizen of this country to be the president, because we're looking at the divine command theory. If he is here to give more foodstuffs to people to help them survive in this country, why not use ethics as a code of conduct instead of righteousness by obeying the law? And some of my students raised the idea. During World War II, the Nazis had a law that you had to turn in all Jews. Well, you remember the story about the Jews that were hidden out? And a lot of the people in Europe lost their lives because they were protecting a lot of the Jews from the Nazis. So, are we to look at this in the very same way? Has anything changed ethically? How do we handle this? How do we keep our Constitution intact and have a unique respect for governmental agencies and authorities and law? And at the same time, how do we protect Pablo and Hannah? Just something that I thought that I'd pass your way. I wanted to see if you were going to track with me to follow this, because it is a very important question that must be answered. And I want to hear the answers from a lot of you that come to my website and spend a lot of time corresponding with me. Would you turn Pablo in? That's what I want to know. Would you turn Pablo in? Or would you let Pablo go free with his wife, Hannah? That is a question. And then I want you to justify it. That's why I love teaching ethics in a secular college. I love it. Because when I teach ethics, when I teach what is right, you know what came from my students? I shouldn't be helping you Christians. What came from my students is the reality that saving another human being, regardless of whether that human being, oh man, listen to this. This sounds like the purity of Jesus. Some of you may disagree with this because you put more credence in the Constitution, which is a man-made document. And trust me, a man-made document made hundreds and hundreds of years before our country is facing the plight or the dilemma that is facing today. Now, here's another question that I like to add on to that, and I'd love to hear some of you try to answer it. Did you think that the founding fathers of this country, when putting the Constitution of the United States together, had in mind that we would be faced with the particular perplexities that we are faced with today? I'm thinking about that as a man of 67 years in my life. I believe, you know, I believe in following the law. But I'm telling you that some of these laws are so ridiculous, and I don't agree that we should trash the Constitution and let anyone stay in this country that's a decent citizen, because in time enough, we wouldn't have enough room to place ourselves. That sounds a little selfish, but you see all the different variables that comes up when we're trying to answer this question. Well, listen, I gotta take care of a little business around the house because I got a Bible study to do. And then what I have to do is I have to get ready for my surgery tomorrow. God bless you. Thanks for coming to the website. I'll try to come back to you as soon as possible. I don't know how many days it's gonna take me to recuperate. I'm praying that everything goes well. But if it doesn't, you won't hear from me in a few days. God bless you. You know the drill, my friends. Whatever you do, stay into the word. Oh, and I'm good with whatever happens in the surgery. I'm not concerned about that. Just got to get it done so that my body will function better. You know, you just get clogged up at times, and that's what happens. No, I don't have cancer or anything like that, because they've taken biopsies and everything. It's just getting it done. That's what I have to do. Love you guys a lot. Try to answer the question. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. You know the drill. Whatever you do, stay in the word. And this is why Pastor John does apologetics the way he does. And I want to thank the brother from Southern Seminary that posed that question. It really worked in my ethics class.